G3. The Model of Being and Its Universal Laws. Number 14A.
Well, we have seen how Mrs. Eddy tried to solve that very, very difficult question to turn a human language into the language of spirit through that means of a system of synonymous terms that all relate to a holistic sense of being, to God. All those 15 capitalized root notions of reality which we have as constituting the system of holism are all terms that express the whole of God, and yet can differentiate infinitely the divine nature of God. This is one thing, how she was building up a method of language, of synonymy, but at the same time incorporating into it the development from the letter to the spirit. Because we cannot understand those capitalized terms except that we have spiritually contemplated the ideas that characterize each one of those capitalized terms. Therefore, those capitalized terms mean something else as in the English language, because they constitute a spiritual tonality. And so through the spiritual tonality of those terms, we touch the spirit of wholeness. This is ingenious, what she did. I don't think that she knew consciously what she did, but retrospectively we see that that was absolutely ingenious. You say ingenious? Yeah. So, can you see that as our Roman 3, as the method of awareness, we have to culture ourselves away from thinking that through a human language we can really be at one with God, that only through actually the capitalized terms and the atmosphere of the capitalized terms, we can really commune and communicate with the whole. So that if we have the tonality of mind, then we speak the language of mind. If we have the tonality of spirit, we speak the language of spirit. And so on. And they are all holistic. Therefore, we communicate no more through speaking, really, and through writing, but through spiritual consciousness, through spiritual awareness. And the chapter on spiritualism has shown us that that is the only true communication. Therefore, we will do much more through that spiritual language than through all our writings and talking and teaching. At the moment we use that medium of writing and talking as a help for the moment, but we will achieve 1,000 times more if we sit back and talk the language of spirit, where we contemplate the whole tonality of the capitalized terms and see the infinite interrelationship of those capitalized terms, the infinite dynamics that is being brought out in a spiritual way when we contemplate that. So only then, when we are mute, when we are still, we really communicate. Stillness tells you everything. Wasn't that the line in Hair, where they said, stillness tells you everything. And therefore, we should be happy if we don't have to talk constantly, We should be happy to have long evenings of quietude. I don't say any more long winter nights. Here it is, 10 and 11 until it gets dark. But it is actually that work which is really helping the world. And if we have anything to work out, sometimes it is much better to be still than to talk a lot and talk things out. It also has its value to talk things out. But mostly the Christ idea works much better and in a much more intelligent way if we sit back and are still and the language of spirit is present within our consciousness. We come to a last big subject, Romans 4, the relationship of science to the other sciences. This is a big question because if we have a holistic science, then it must be the science of all sciences. So we can't say we are studying Christian science, which is a science next to all other sciences. It is not next to the 100 sciences, the 101 science. It is the one science. And that one science is a science of all sciences. Actually, this is a very new idea, though in the world, the new thinkers, the new scientists, they know that there must be just one science. They know it, they feel it, but naturally they say, we don't know anything about it. We only know that it must exist, because it's reasonable. Because as they see that there is only one principle of the universe, not many principles that rule the universe, but one principle, therefore there can be only one proto-science, one first science, or however we will call it. So that from this one science, all the other sciences are deduced. Now, this is a field in which we have not worked yet quite a lot, but we are starting to work in that line and see how is it that if we understand the one science of God, how does that apply to various fields of human activity? How does it apply to the various fields of activity? Just like in any other faculty at the university, you usually first learn the theoretical science, and then when one knows the theoretical science, then we are taught the applied sciences. In the same way, we should see that we first have to get hold of the one science, that holistic science, which is divine science, and then see that from that vantage point we could deduce really what should be the right sciences in any field of human activity. So that it is a translation from a theoretical science to the applied sciences. So this is a great question under four, because this holistic philosophy must have also the contain the science of all sciences. Under 2, you see, we have to distinguish very clearly between Roman 2 and Roman 4. Under Roman 2, we were considering the scientific criteria of a science. What makes up a science? What makes up the holistic science? Under 4, it's a different question. We ask, that science must be the science of all sciences. There can be no other science that exists next to that one science, but that one science must translate itself so that it has its reflection in all the various departments of human life. So the question is, what is that relationship from the theoretical divine science to the applied science of that divine science? Like absolute Christian science and Christian science are applied sciences. Okay, now we go out first, naturally, to see that the old sciences, that were sciences that were relying on the very counterfeit of the elements of a holistic science. They were not relying on ideas. They were relying on human thinking, on human reasoning. They were relying not on spiritual ideas, but on matter and substance matter. They were not relying on the spiritual sense of ideas, but on the sense testimony of the material senses. They were not relying on the idea of system. They were relying that the human mind builds up systems and conceives of systems, has hypotheses and theories. And so all through the elements of science, we can see that the old science uses the exact opposite than the holistic science. So the old science, therefore, cannot be considered as a science of all the sciences. Not one of the sciences of the one proto-science called divine science. And yet they cover a field of human experience. And therefore we must see that somehow they must be overturned and overturned so that the right idea of these sciences will be brought out. And this is actually what I feel that the next 40 years or so should show us, that we will find in the textbook answer that will give a satisfactory explanation of how we arrive at the sciences of the one science. Again, to repeat it, these sciences of the one science cannot be the sciences that we have today, because they rely on a false basis. Just the other day, I was reading David Bohm, how he said something very clear about the way we look at the world, and said, fragmentation is an ontological wrong view, in parentheses, ignorance. So that fragmentation is an ontological ignorance, to start out. That to have fragmented sciences is actually fundamentally, from the ontological point of view, a great ignorance. Think of such a statement, where every scientist thinks that he is the very enlightened scientist. Ignorance, he goes on with ignorance, ignorance concerns the most universal habit of taking the content of our thought for the description of the world as it is. Can you see what, shall I say, my words? It says in my words, which are not so exact as his, but perhaps a bit more understandable. He says, look here, all we scientists, we're thinking that the way we were thinking about the world is actually thinking about the real world. But actually we are only thinking about the content of our thinking. Can you see? That's why he said the observer becomes really important, but we don't know much about the observer. We don't know much about consciousness. He goes on and says, the oneness of reality cannot be contained within our limited conceptual formulation. That this is impossible to use our conceptual formulations, because our conceptual formulations are always limited, he says. This is in the nature of the human mind that it is limited. So, because we have a limited conceptual sense, we can only formulate something that is limited, and therefore that cannot contain reality. So it's hope. More or less, he said, look here, it's hopeless what we do. We try with a limited concept to see something unlimited. That's ignorance. He even goes on and says, there is a reality which is beyond man. It's beyond man. With man, naturally, he meant beyond the human thinking, beyond the human consciousness, which is beyond man, but which includes man. Now, can you see? Instead that we think that with our conception we can include reality, he turns it right the other way around and says, there is a reality and that reality will include man. So that man is included in reality and not that we include within our concepts reality. Can you see? It's like at the time of Copernicus. He turned the whole worldview upside down. Instead of the Ptolemaic attitude, we had the Copernican attitude, which put the whole worldview upside down. Instead of putting the earth in the middle of everything, he put the sun into the center of everything. And so the same thing happens here. It's a Copernican Wende. A Copernical change of vantage point. Let me put it like that. Just as they had to undergo that around about 1500, they had to undergo it. They couldn't help it. Though they could see the sun rising and going down and the sun going around the earth, they had to accept that this is wrong. They had to accept it, even if they don't like it, even if they don't believe it. Even if they don't believe it today, we still say the sun is rising, the sun is going down. We still are in the old Ptolemaic concept of the universe. Only when we change and say, now let's use our brain waves. What have we learned there somewhere in class 7, in grade 7? Oh, they said, this is wrong, you have to think the other way around and so on. It's a great effort. It has not been ingrained yet into our being, the new Copernican worldview. And so it is with our relationship with reality. We think that with our limited concepts we can embrace infinitude. We can't. Infinitude embraces us. So, I haven't finished the sentence. He said, there is a reality which is beyond man and includes man, but this is unknown. Think of a big thinker of today, of the 80s, that says, but we don't know the most important thing. We don't know anything about the most important thing. Isn't that a wonderful, honest scientist? This I call scientists, when they are honest to say where their limits are. Indeed, he says, wholeness is what is real. And this is what naturally Mrs. Eddy has seen. Can you fathom step by step what I said at the beginning of this week? But what I want to show is actually not something that you have not heard over and over. You have heard over and over that God is the creator and that man is God's creation. That God is greater than man and that God includes man. We have heard that over and over. But have we realized that that was a Copernican change of worldview? A complete change. And that we must be aware that we are in the same position as those people at that time, round about 1500, that we still think in the old science and read new science in the textbook. but we think still in the old science. And that we, and by becoming aware that we make that mistake, we naturally help ourselves to become much more conscious of how to think really in the new science, holistically. That's what I want to bring out. So, what then is Mrs. Eddy's concept in regard to the one science, the holistic science, and those human sciences, human conceptions of reality? And she said, well, all human system based on material premises, which all the sciences do, are minus the unction of spirit. And so this is the key tone to resolve the whole relationship between science and sciences, that we see that the sciences as we have them now are minus the unction of spirit, capitalized, are minus the unction of holism. And therefore, we see that if we want to find those sciences that are deduced from the one science, the science of spirit, that we must find a completely new basis. So Christian science, it says, eschews natural science. Christian science eschews man-made system because it sees that there is no physical science, as all truth proceeds from mind, capital M. So this gives us at least the standpoint from which to work. Now, we can ask ourselves, has Mrs. Eddy given us answers to how these sciences should look like if they are deduction from a holistic science? And actually, up to now, as what we have seen, and I say up to what we have seen, we may see much more in the textbook as the time goes on, we see very few indications, but there are indications. Let me just take one from Pro's work, where she indicates somehow how we could resolve that whole thing. She says in Miscellany, she said, what is termed in common speech the principle of harmonious vibration, the principle of conversation of number in geometry, the principle of the inclined plane in mechanics? You see, she takes a few diverse sciences and says all these sciences have a principle, are but an effect of one universal cause, an emanation of the one divine intelligent principle, capital P, capital P, that holds the earth in its orbit by evolved spiritual power, that commands even the waves and the winds, that marks the sparrow's fall, so from the biggest to the smallest, and that governs all from the infinitesimal to the infinite, namely God. So if you read that at home, you can see that she's speaking about various principles in various fields of science and says, okay, these all must be principle of one principle, capital P, the effect of one universal cause, of one divine intelligent principle. That principle, which it says, holds even the earth in its orbit. We thought that material power holds the earth in its orbit, that gravitational power, power of attraction, holds it in its orbit. And she says, and holds the earth in its orbit by evolved spiritual power, that even commands the waves and the winds, and mark even the littles of littles, the sparrows fall, that governs all from the infinitesimal to the infinite, namely God. So this is one indication that she began, that she wants to hint. And there are not many such indications that she wants to hint that if we understand the divine principle of God, that that is the principle of all principles, whatever the field of application will be, from the infinitesimal to the infinite. That's one indication. Another indication she gives, which should encourage us for a whole field of analysis, a whole field of research, really, is again in the sixth chapter.